my love is like a red, red rose that's newly sprung in June. For my love's like the melody that's sweetly played in tune. As fair art thou, my bonny lass, so deep in love am I. And I will love thee still, my dear, till a' the sea's gone dry. Till a' the sea's gone dry, my dear, and the rocks melt wi' the sun, I will love thee still, my dear, while the sands o' life shall run. And fare thee will, my love, my only love, and fare thee will a while, and I will come again, my love, though it were 10,000 miles. That verse is entitled, My Love's Like a Red, Red Rose. It was written by Robert Burns. This is your host, Mike Worf. On today's presentation, we turn to the life and times and reveal the work of Robert Burns in our presentation entitled, The Immortal Poet. My heart's in the highlands, my heart is not here. My heart's in the highlands, a-chasing the deer, a-chasing the wild deer, and following the roe. My heart's in the highlands, wherever I go. Farewell to the highlands, farewell to the north, the birthplace of valor, the country of worth. Wherever I wander, wherever I rove, the hills of the highlands forever I love. Farewell to the mountains high covered with snow, farewell to the straths and green valleys below. Farewell to the forests and wild hanging woods. Farewell to the torrents and loud pouring floods. My heart's in the highlands, my heart is not here. My heart's in the highlands a-chasing the deer, chasing the wild deer and following the roe. My heart's in the highlands, wherever I go. Robert Burns, the great lyric poet of Scotland, was born January 25th in the year of 1759 near the seacoast town of Ayr. His father, William Burness, had all he could do to support a family of children, of whom Robert was the eldest. The boy soon became a stalwart toiler and could turn a furrow and reap a swath with the best of his comrades. But his mind meanwhile grasped strongly and passionately all the literature to which it could get access. This was limited in extent. The books in his father's humble cottage were very few. He devoured besides everything in prose and verse that he could buy or borrow, and there were soon to arouse in him all the longings of repressed genius and unemployed ambition. Many of Burns's poems have had music set to them, but he began his rhythmical career by fitting poetry to music. A girlfriend often worked beside him in the fields, as was the custom in that locality. She was a beautiful songstress, or at least seemed to be so, to the untutored peasant boy, and Robert soon learned to put new words to many of her tunes, not forgetting to include in them due commendations of the young lady herself. These efforts naturally received more or less applause, and the youth found his mind more and more drawn toward poetic effort. His first few years seemed to have been spent in a half-happy, half-careless boyhood. In them, he had all the experiences of a poor but healthy Scotch peasant lad, toiling in the fields, catching now and then a few weeks or months at school, coquetting with neighboring lassies, but with poverty and lack of social position always barring the way to his advancement. Through all this, poetry was his solace and his amusement. At the age of 15, he had written many verses which, although crude, contained the promise of his subsequent career. But of course, at that time, they were only admired by a limited circle of neighbors and friends. He also unhappily contracted certain convivial habits, which lasted in a greater or less degree all through his life, which no one regretted more than he did at times, and which greatly impaired and finally put an end to a brilliant career. When Robert was 25 years of age, his father, the good William Burness, died, and the family, who had kept well together, took a farm about 8 miles distant from the old home near Ayr. Here, the young farmer poet undertook to become a thorough and industrious husbandman. He turned his attention toward the literature of the farm. He tried to bend his powerful, though dreamy mind toward the prosaic and the practical. But the venture did not thrive. Some of the 1,001 casualties that are always besetting crops and crop growers came his way, and the brave venture which he and his brother Gilbert had undertaken together proved scant of success. Robert Burns, however, may be said to have done the greatest work of his life upon that farm. It was while one day weeding the garden with his brother that he first decided, after they had talked it over carefully, to be an author and to write verses that would bear publishing. It is to be noticed that from this hour he became more methodical with his muse and seemed to work toward a purpose, and that within a short time after this resolve, he wrote most of the poems that have made his name immortal. Thank you. Flow gently, sweet Afton, among thy green braes. Flow gently, I'll sing thee a song in thy praise. My Mary's asleep by thy murmuring stream. Flow gently, sweet Afton, disturb not her dream. Thou stock dove whose echo resounds from the hill, ye wild whistling blackbirds in yon thorny dell. Thou green-crested lapwing, thy screaming forbear, I charge you, disturb not my slumbering fair. How lofty, sweet Afton, by neighboring hills far marked with the courses of clear winding rills. There daily I wander, as morn rises high. My flocks and my Mary's sweet caught in my eye, high pleasant thy banks and green valleys below, where wild in the woodlands the primroses blow. There oft, as mild evening creeps over the lea, the sweet-scented birk shades my Mary and me. Thy crystal stream, Afton, how lovely it glides and winds by the cot where my Mary resides. How wanton thy waters her snowy feet lave, as gathering sweet flowerets she stems thy clear wave. Flow gently, sweet Afton, among thy green braes. Flow gently, sweet river, the theme of my lays. My Mary's asleep by thy murmuring stream. Flow gently, sweet Afton, disturb not her dream. In the year of 1786, it was definitely decided that the farm was not going to pay, and that Burns's efforts as a farmer had failed. But these were not the only troubles that were gathering in the young poet's path. In 1785, he became engaged to his Highland Mary. If we may judge by his poems, this was the one among his numerous love affairs in which his heart was most deeply enthralled. But there was another in which he was inextricably and fatally entangled. It was with a young girl, Jean Amour, to whom he seems to have been as sincerely attached as his headlong, susceptible nature would allow him to be to anyone. He made the best amends he could to the bonny lass by giving her his written acknowledgement of marriage, a process perfectly legal in Scotland, though irregular. But her father still hoped for a more advantageous alliance for his daughter, and refused her to the poor poet, a sentiment in which the daughter, to all appearances, heartily joined. It is interesting to think of this poverty-stricken family rejecting Burns, even after matters had gone thus far, on account of his lack of wealth, when he had had at the very time in his little desk poems for which the world has since paid millions of pounds. But the future is often unseen, even by those highest in learning and deepest in wit. And it is little wonder that the unsophisticated family were unable to know even the pecuniary value of our young plowman's brain. Discouraged and depressed, the young Burns resolved on emigrating to Jamaica as bookkeeper of a wealthy planter in order to procure money with which to pay the expenses of his journey, and no doubt partly in pursuance of the plan made that day in the garden, he decided to publish a small volume by subscription, which he did at Kilmarnock. The time, July 1786, having as the title page of the book, Poems Chiefly in the Scottish Dialect by Robert Burns. It will be seen that he now dropped the fifth and sixth letters from the name inherited of his father, and a boy Burness became the man, Robert Burns. This book achieved immediate and unexpected success, and having realized a few pounds from its profits, Burns set out for Greenock, where he was to take a ship for his new West Indian home. But his poems had attracted so much attention and had been the cause of such commendation that he was finally encouraged to stay and enjoy some of the fruits of his genius, which the world was now beginning to discover. In November of that same year, encouraged by verbal praises and written commendations, some of them all the way from the literary center of Edinburgh, he journeyed to that city, where he was received with great cordiality by many of the leading people and urged to issue a second edition of his poems, which he did in April of the ensuing year. It was sold, like the first one, by subscription, and netted the author as much, if not more, than the previous sum. But it procured for him fame all through the country. That fame came in the name of the Ploughman Poet. During this year, he took the several tours in different parts of his native Scotland in company with congenial spirits, once going a very little way into England. He was received gladly and hospitably everywhere by those who had read and admired his work. His journals and letters during that period, probably upon the whole, the most happy period in his life, teem with accounts of courtesies, hospitalities, merrymakings, and gallantries, which he mentions as taking place all along the route. His poetic pen never seems to have remained idle very long at a time, and albums, flyleafs, notebooks, letters, and sometimes window panes received in turn his quaint and fiery verses. In October, he returned to Edinburgh, where he remained for some time, filling social engagements and tangling himself in certain affairs of the heart, and endeavoring to get a settlement with his publisher, whom he considered as owing him the immediate payment of a considerable sum of money. He also assisted a compiler in making collections of old Scottish songs and in furnishing new words to old airs. It is a singular fact that while Burns was willing to earn money with a regular edition of his poems, he steadfastly declined remuneration for his songs, claiming that he did this work as a work of love. With the natural Scotch thrift of his father's, he soon decided that he must have some more substantial occupation than that of a poet, and he applied and received a position in the excise. To add to his income, he, in 1788, leased a farm on the River Nife, about 12 miles from Dumfries. The place contained 100 acres and was stated to be more the choice of a poet than that of a farmer. Its fine situation and beautiful views compensated, perhaps, in Burns's mind for its sterility. Here he brought his wife, Jean Armour, whom he had married under such unpleasant circumstances a few years before, and to whom he was drawn again as much by pity as by love, her parents having turned her out of doors. It is hardly necessary to say that the parents received him with open arms, now that he came with some signs of prosperity. And he no doubt entered anew upon married life with that sincere, if somewhat tardy, blessing from himself and from his in-laws. Upon this farm of Ellis Lamb, Robert Burns lived 3 years, and during that time he had 3 occupations: farmer, poet, and excise officer. In the last named, he was in the habit of riding 200 miles per week to different points throughout the county. He wrote considerably, but perhaps not so well, as if he had not been hurried and worried by practical affairs. As an officer, he is generally admitted to have been thorough, correct, and at the same time humane. As a farmer, he again failed, and in 1791 sold back the lease of his place, pocketed, it is said, a loss of £300, and moved with his family to Dumfries. Here he took up the plan of living entirely upon his salary from the government, £70 per annum. This would seem a meager stipend now, but it would at that time have enabled Burns to support his family in comfort, though not in the way his abilities entitled him to do. His position gave him some advantages, and he had the hope of an advance in his salary, which would follow a looked-for promotion to the office of supervisor. He spent his time in the performance of his duties, in collecting and writing songs for the already mentioned collection of Scottish melodies, and in meeting and conversing with many friends whom his genius and geniality drew around him. But his hopes and his health gradually failed together. Dumfries was on one of the great stage lines that led to and from London, and it was often invaded by tourists who were intent on making a night of it with a well-known peasant poet. In these bouts, in which he was generally willing to recite his poems and sing his songs, he received much pleasure and applause, but nothing else save the wear and tear of dissipation. His habit of outspoken opinion in political and other matters proved obstacles to his advancement in the public service. He fell gradually into debt, despondency, and disease, a mournful trio of companions for the most brilliant of Scottish poets. An old man before his time, he lay down to die in 1796, having lived, as time is counted, only 37 short years. are listening to the visual sounds of Mike Worf. Please press fast forward, let side one expire, and turn tape over for part two of the life and times and the work of the immortal poet, Robert Burns. Banks and braes and streams around the castle of Montgomery. Green be your woods and fair your flowers, your waters never drumly. There Semifirst unfold her robes, and there the langest tally, but there I took the last farewell of my sweet Highland Mary. How sweetly bloomed the gay green birk, how rich the hawthorn's blossom, as underneath their fragrant shade I clasped her to my bosom. The golden hours on angels' wings flew o'er me and my dearie, for dear to me is light and life was my sweet Highland Mary. With many a vow and locked embrace, our parting for tender, and pledging aft to meet again, we tore ourselves asunder. But oh, fell death's untimely frost that nipped my flower sae early. Now green's the sod and cold's the clay that wraps my Highland Mary. Oh, pale, pale now those rosy lips I after kissed sae fondly, and closed for aye the sparkling glance that dwelt on me so kindly. And mouldering now in silent dust that heart that loved me dearly. But still within my bosom's core shall live my Highland Mary. Ye banks and braes of bonny Doon, how can ye bloom sae fresh and fair? How can ye chant, ye little birds, and I sae weary for a care? Thou'lt break my heart, thou wobbling bird that wantons through the flowering thorn. Thou minds me o' departed joys, departed, never to return. Thou'lt break my heart, thou bonny bird that sings beside thy mate. Say I sat and say I sang, and wist now my fate. Eft ha' I roved my bonny Doon, to see the rose and woodbine twine, and ilka bird sang o'er its love, and fondly said it o' mine. Wi' lightsome heart I put a rose for sweets upon its thorny tree, and my first lover stole my rose, but ah, he left the thorn with me. With lightsome heart I put a rose upon a morn in June, and sae I flourish on the morn, and sae I was put on noon. ¶¶ The fame of this great and unfortunate poet has increased since his death. Scotchmen everywhere thrill with pride when Burns's magic name is spoken, and the world in general has a sincere love for the warm-hearted, plain-spoken bard who turned his own soul to the gaze of his fellow beings that they might the better know their own. The time of today's program will not permit even an enumeration of his wonderful works. The world may also be said to know them by heart. His Cotter Saturday Night, Tam O'Shanter, Auld Lang Syne, Bruce's Address, A Man's a Man for That, and so many others that might be named and read are likely to live for generation after generation. And his character as a man, although subject in many respects to severe criticism, can always be covered with a mantle of loving charity. And we remember his generosity of heart, his manly independence of spirit, his natural nobility of mind, and consider the difficult circumstances and terrible temptations that encompassed the stormy life of the immortal poet, Robert Burns. Today on Kaleidoscope, we have turned to the life and times of the immortal poet, the story of Robert Burns, with a bit of his wonderful lyric. Bonnie Doon, my Highland Mary, blow gently, sweet Afton. So many more that will live through time to make the man and to make the spirit live on. To continue to live, to remain immortal. Robert Burns.